from Relay FM. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 66, recorded April the 4th, 2023. I am Master of Ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me as always, Director of Strategy at Parrot Analytics and columnist at Puck, it's Julia Alexander. Hi, Julia.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good. I tried to give you a little wind-up there. Here's Julia. How are you?
I feel like you are in the baseball spirit. You're like, you've got the announcer coming to the plate vibes.
Man, I just need like an organist somewhere to start breaking out music every time we... Well, maybe Stephen Schepansky, our editor, can put some. He does the sports corner music whenever. So,
and look, I know that we're only 7 or 8 games into the season, but I already have to share my condolences with the New York Metropolitans. If only because have they been off to a bad start, the Mets, but also the rain in New York. We've had like monsoons, and Yankees cleverly figured out a year ago to not be in town this week. And so rough start for the Mets. So any Mets fans listening, I think it's going to be a season of pain. And I can say that as a White Sox fan. So
yeah, well,
we'll just embrace it early.
I think the White Sox are going to be under a whole lot more pain than the Mets, honestly.
Yeah, I'm used to it. It's fine.
So, you know, my favorite thing about the season, that we are derailed here, but that's okay. My favorite thing about my visit, because I have been to whatever they call New Comiskey Park now, it doesn't matter, the White Sox Stadium, one time. And my favorite feature of that stadium is that they will sell you just a roasted corn cob. Just a corn on the cob. It's been roasted. It's like got little blackened edges. It's got, they dip it in like butter, and you can just buy it, and it's like on a stick, and you just eat it. Every stadium should have corn. Every stadium should have roast corn.
You can't get ketchup on your hot dogs. It's we won't talk about it. This is now a baseball podcast.
I love it. Okay, we'll move on into proper content now. The story of Disney Plus, your Puck column this week. I always enjoy reading your columns because I am trying to glean things from them for us to talk about on the podcast, but I also know that the reverse happens where we talk about things here and then they end up in the column, which
I
did that with Tim Goodman back in the day in the Hollywood Reporter. I did that with my tech stuff too, right? Where it's the, did I read this article already? No, I heard them talk about it on the podcast and then they turned it into an article. Sometimes it goes the other way. It's
also
great.
These are basically really great. Both Jason and I work from home and these are great brainstorming sessions.
It is. I mean, I'm not kidding. You talk through an issue on a podcast and sometimes it's I wrote a whole article about this and I'm ready to talk about it, and sometimes you just talk it through and then you need to write an article and you're like, hey, I've been thinking about that, I had that conversation, I can make something of this. So the story of Disney Plus, and we spent most of last episode, which was only a week ago, we're back on track now, talking about Disney. So you wrote this piece and I think it's a really good sort of like, let's see where we are. Because remember, Disney Plus was announced to fanfare. They built up a huge audience with their artificially, we all knew it at the time, low price. But they did build up a big subscriber base to start. And so you wrote this piece that sort of gives us a reset, which is their growth has stagnated. Their international growth has paled in comparison to Netflix. And while they are cutting costs and moving toward profitability, they have not created enough new initiatives to push the business forward in terms of growth and engagement, which you link to a great tweet by Jason Kilar, basically saying, is it Kilar? I think it's Kilar. Yeah. I don't know. Jason K., our friend.
Jason K.
We love Jason K. He's super smart.
Jason.
He's super smart. No, I'm thinking I'm the other Jason in this context. Super smart. And he said, you know what it is, whether you're talking about broadcast or streaming or anything, it's like, how many people are watching and how long do they watch? And that's all that matters. And he's not wrong on a very simple level. He's not wrong. So, you went into it and you said like, they've got some advantages. We know what Disney's advantages are, but they've also got a lot of disadvantages, which I thought was fascinating because you tied it to their advantages. You tied it to the fact that in theatrical tentpoles and in parks, you go big, you get the attention, and you move on. And as you said, it's not really how streaming works, right? You can't move on. You can never move on. And I thought that was really insightful because that is definitely one of Disney's problems, is that they invested in this launch and it was huge. And then you kind of got the sense that they took their eye off the ball and you can't do that with a streaming service or three, mm-hmm. which they own three. You can't do that.
Yeah, it's funny. I found myself agreeing with what you were saying, and then I was like, oh, I wrote
You're
this.
Agreeing with yourself. Yeah. Perceptive me reading your article back to you, but there we are.
I'll do that sometimes. Like, normally I feel very bad about my, like self and just thoughts in general. And every once in a while I'll say something, and then I'll be talking it out with a coworker, and I'll be like, man, that's a great idea. And he's like, yeah, you should give yourself a pat on the back. I think to set the stage for this, you know, we're recording on Thursday. Yesterday was the shareholder vote,
yep.
this long-standing shareholder vote that really set Nelson Peltz up against Bob Iger, Nelson Peltz of Trian Capital kind of coming in, and Bob Iger swept the floor, right? Like, Disney had, I think it was 94% of the votes were in favor of what Disney was putting out there. They kind of wiped the floor with Nelson Peltz. And there was a lot of attention within the media, a lot of attention from Disney, of course, about this vote. And there's two inherent conversations happening around this vote. One is succession, right? One is who is going to succeed Bob Iger. And Jason and I talked about that quite at length last week. And the other one was kind of the DTC business. And so the place that I wanted to come into the column was effectively, well, where are they? Like what actually is working? What's not working for Disney? And if you want to be a direct consumer business, and I think we're hitting a point in the downstream era, which I'm really excited about, where we are hitting a point where, like, we're coming on the other end of this, where it's, okay, who actually wants to be a player? Like who, now that everyone's experimented with it and they've had their fun, how many of them are saying, okay, this is something I really want to do? There was a really interesting interview between Nick Khan, who's the head of WWE, and my colleague at Puck, Matt Bellany, on his podcast, The Town, over at Ringer. And they were talking about the WWE streaming service they used to have, the DTC offering. And Nick Khan quite literally points out, he's like, we could have kept that going, but it's really expensive running a tech business. Like, it's like the level of operation costs that go into it, let alone the content costs, are ridiculous. And so we realized we could just go create partnerships out of our content and leverage ourselves that way. I think we're about to see it with a lot of these other companies. Disney, however, firmly in that we want to be a direct consumer business. We want to be a distributor in many ways. And I think what got lost in the Disney conversation, because Disney has never really had to think about this, even in their television business, and I'm going to get to that in a second, is that what we want out of TV has fundamentally not changed. Like, it's the same thing. What we, or how we access that TV, has changed irrevocably.
Yeah.
Those are really distinct points that I think are hard for a lot of companies to kind of put together. This idea of, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with this other large story that we've been talking about forever with streaming, Jason, which is, you know, Netflix licensing the suit stuff, which is just people watching TV, right? Like that story inherently is people watch television.
Yeah.
I have a conversation with someone the other day who was saying, we were talking about network programming, and we were looking at Tracker, which is the new CBS show. That show does like 14, 15 million viewers a week. Like, mm-hmm. that show does huge numbers. And it's because it's the most quintessential TV show. Like, yeah. That makes a ton of sense.
And a Super Bowl launch, which you could pretend doesn't matter, but I think it helped, right?
Absolutely, a post-Super Bowl launch,
yeah.
Of course. You're absolutely right. And I think there's an element where Disney has always, you know, echoing what Jason just said, always, always, always been good at event. They've always been good at, here's a big movie, right? Here's a big theme. But your big day or your big week at the theme park, we have this huge ride. Even think about their TV business. Like, what really made their TV business in a lot of ways? Yes, of course, ABC was quintessential. And they have a lot of channels that were quintessential TV. But Disney Channel found its moment with the Disney Channel movies, which had like the High School Musical moment. They had a few TV shows. I'm not trying to downplay Hannah Montana or any of that, but they really came into light with kind of these movies. ESPN is literally built on scarcity with shoulder programming that you could sell ads on. And although people watch SportsCenter literally resets itself for 6 hours in the morning. Like, it's the same thing. Yeah. It's just over and over again. What you're really paying for is access to like Monday Night Football or live programming. And so Disney has always been in this game of selling an event. That's always been their thing. And they go from event to event to event, and they find multiple ways to monetize it. whether it is a movie that is theatrical and then goes to a DVD and then goes to a pay one window, so like HBO, and then a pay two window like FX, whether it's that, whether it is, again, the Monday Night Football game on ESPN that you then sell shoulder programming around, SportsCenter before, the post game SportsCenter afterwards, that's an event. Whether, again, it's a theme park and you're bringing people in, there's a new ride, you're finding ways to get people in there, and then you're selling the merchandise and the food around that. Disney has always, always been a huge event with lots of fandom built into it. Television is the opposite of this. TV is comfort. TV is familiarity. TV is something that you have on. It's a constant buzz. It's why we have that hum. It's why the HBO opening is that crackle, right? Like there's a literal technology kind of sound associated with it. There's a warmth from that television screen associated with it always being on. We literally have things burned into our TV screens because it's on all the time. And I think when you're a seller of content, it's okay to not think about that component. But when you're a distributor, you now have to consider all of the elements that go into the fundamental behavior of watching television. And Disney could never plan for that. Disney could never think of, okay, well, we have our catalog and that's going to offset the event. That's not really what works. You know what works really well? Look at CBS, NBC, and ABC. Format. Format works really well. Hey, we have NCIS. What if we did 8 more? Or we have the Amazing Race. What if we did a 2-hour Amazing Race? It's the simplest formula and it works for one reason. And this is not to insult anyone. I include myself in this. We are simple folks when it comes to television. We have very simple things. We want our HBO, absolutely. But then we also want to watch HGTV. We want to watch our procedurals, our comedies, whatever it might be. And I think as Disney goes forward, they have two issues really pointing out to them. I'm going to pass it to you, Jason, to get your thoughts. One, fundamentally, figure out television. Easier said than done. Right? Easier said than done. Because you have to do two things. You have to figure out how to do it domestically, which is looking at your slate and what you're going to buy and what you're going to license. You also have to figure it out internationally. So if you're going to be in certain markets, how important is local language programming? How important is it from a cultural standpoint, whatever it might be? How well does your travel, does your content that you have domestically travel to those territories, et cetera, et cetera? That's the first question. The second question is, if you're Disney, is you are no longer vying for the same percentage size slice of pie. So it used to be you'd come home at night and you'd say, what am I going to watch? Now it's, what am I going to do, right? Am I going to watch something? Am I going to play something? Am I going to be on my phone? Am I going to do none of these things? Am I just going to go to sleep? And if you're Disney, when it used to just be, what am I going to watch? You might compete for 15% of that pie. Now, if you're competing for what am I going to do, you might be competing for 4% of that pie, which is a huge strain on your revenue cycle. So if you're Disney, you do a couple of things that we're already seeing them do, right? You partner with Epic Games, makes a ton of sense. You're going to have them go over there. You are going to find ways to bring in more additional programming that reaches larger audiences. So sports might be, you might look into ways to sell additional merchandise through those portals. You might betting, right? So betting with an ESPN, all these other kind of ancillary routes. But what I point out in the column is you also need to be a command center. I keep using this term. You need to control kind of where people are, how they're getting to where they're going. So if you have an Epic Games counterpart, can you get people, can you keep stats alive in your Disney Plus app and send them to the Fortnite app? If you have stuff going viral on TikTok, instead of issuing copyright takedowns, can you actually find ways to partner with TikTok to have a watch on Disney Plus button associated with those types of things? If the AI identifies it, so YouTube has something called Content ID, TikTok has something similar. If it identifies that this is owned by Disney, you can then say, hey, watch this on Disney Plus or Hulu, right? Like figuring out ways to say, we know we're not going to control all of your attention. Reed Hastings said this 3-4 years ago. We know we're not going to control all of it, but we would like to control or at least command some of your attention and bring you back through these portals. So that way we're always top of mind. One is a very strong tech challenge. Like the latter is a huge tech issue that like Amazon and Apple are throwing everything at. Like they're trying to figure it out, and they're tech companies and Disney is not. The former though is the most pressing one, because it is, if you're going to be like, streaming has movies and people watch movies, but streaming is inherently a television game because it's what you watch on your TV set at, like it's just inherently what you're doing. Most people are watching TV. You need to figure out how to be a TV player in a way that I don't think Disney has really ever had to, because they had this ESPN moment and they could kind of be like, oh, we have the, they've always been an event, and then they had the broadcaster. But I'm interested in your opinion, Jason.
Well, it comes down, a lot of good stuff there and a lot of stuff we covered last week too. I want to focus on something that you say at the end of your article, which is the reality is Disney's success in streaming requires another transformational moment. And you mentioned TV, and that it's TV, and that it's not an event movie, and it's not a park that showcase where you build it and then it's there for 20 years. It's an ongoing relationship. I think that Disney is, whether they have thought about it a lot or not, whether it was the plan or not, I think that Disney is better positioned here than one might think. And it's because of Hulu and FX.
Yes.
It's because they bought most of Fox. Because you know who gets, first off, the content on Hulu is good. And there's more of it. And that allows there to be more content in the, if we think of Disney Plus and Hulu as a bundle, it is a much better catalog with more new stuff all the time, right? And then you're not worried about, is it a Star Wars or is it a Pixar? Or, I mean, and they've done a little, I mean, they're going to have Doctor Who in May. Great. But like, then you throw in Hulu and it's like,
yes.
If I think of that as a whole, suddenly it's like, well, I was watching Only Murders in the Building, and but now I'm watching Shogun. And to back it up one level, I mentioned FX. Like, they got John Landgraf and the whole FX team that they used to just do FX, and then they did FX and FXX, which was their comedy channel, and then they added FX on Hulu. But like, that Fox essentially TV group that is now inside Disney gets it. They get it. And they are putting out great content on streaming and some of it on linear, but all the time. And it's like, so I think if we really, and Disney has to have a transformational moment where they realize that, you know, they're not just Disney. They're also everything that's on Hulu. And that's really what the service is and the thing they're trying to sell. And then I think they're actually in a much stronger position, because culturally that part of the company gets it. And honestly, that's what's missing from a lot of the Disney Plus only programming is that television sensibility. You've got a bunch of movie people, Star Wars, Pixar, who don't have the TV sensibility. And like, bless the movie people, because they have ambition, and you know, they want everything to be big and like a movie, and they're I think in this era, having those people pushing the medium is important too. But at the end of the day, you also need to understand the medium and the volume required and the variety of content. And, you know, and FX, the FX programming on Hulu has done that.
Well, and so this got cut from the article because I have very good editors, and they, I trust them inherently. But what I originally referred to as Disney's advantage, and so for people who haven't read it, the column is broken down to like what's working, what's not, what they have to do next. And in the what's working, I originally had it as Disney's three B's, because I love like those little coin things. And it was Buzz, I think it was Buzz, Big, and Bundle. Mm-hmm. And it was this idea that, like, they're to exactly what Jason's saying, like, the fact that they have the bundle and now the fact that it's all within one tech stack not only means that they can recommend this and have it within Disney Plus, so you have the Hulu really acting as this engagement. And by the way, I think this is the largest, I think two things. This is the largest move Disney could make within streaming domestically, one they had to make. Two, I think once this deal is done with Comcast, it gives Disney every reason to invest further into Hulu, because they're not going to drive up the value and then worry about paying it off. Like, now they can just invest in it for themselves. And so I think you'll see a lot more work there. But it also means that they can build, and Bob Iger spoke about this, I think, yesterday during the shareholders meeting, they can build ESPN into, like, OTT into Disney Plus, right? So you're bringing live sports in. It also means that you have the advantage of using all this machine learning capabilities to better recommend additional content across all these three different services. And I think it also means that you can build on top of that. So you can build some of these experiences, whether it's betting, whether it's games, whatever it might be. When it's all within one tech stack, the idea that you can have all of these bundles, this bundled operation, while existing on their own for people who really just want ESPN OTT or really just want Disney Plus. I don't know who you are, but that's fine. Like who really just want those services, they can continue existing. But this idea that they can now create a kind of an interoperability within their streaming products that allows them to continuously build out and then take mm-hmm. those features and extrapolate and then build them onto other apps that they might be building. I think that really gives Disney a core advantage as well.
Yeah. They're almost too many silos, too vertical. And there are lots of historic reasons why that's the case. But this is when I think of another transformational moment, like you said, and yeah, they have to finish the buyout of Hulu. But like, I think taking down a lot of the silos is going to be part of it, because branding is important, but there's also branding that's not necessary. And I think the Hulu stuff, the FX stuff, like there are too many silos for content that's actually just, this is our content that we're giving you. This is, you know, you should think that you got the Mandalorian here, or you've got, you know, some other Star Wars thing, and then Shogun is happening, and then Only Murders is happening, and then it just kind of keeps going like that, mm-hmm. and just keep coming back to the Disney Plus app for all of it. And I have, honestly, I made the move the other week where we were watching Shogun in the Hulu app, and I said, you know what? I'm going to start watching it in the Disney Plus app, and I don't need to see the Hulu app anymore. And I don't mind. I it's kind of nice, because now I go into Disney Plus, and it says, new episode of Shogun. Well, you want to watch that? And I'm like, yes. By the way, watch it. It's great. Just going to throw that out there. Shogun, great.
But this is everything. Also, thank you for reminding me that the other B was not big. It was brand. So it was brand, buzz, and bundle. But
they changed the buzz to marketing.
Oh, did they?
Yeah,
see, bundle, brand, and marketing. B's. And they, okay. Well, yeah. We love our editors.
Yeah.
And they actually do make me sound smarter. So I appreciate them. But related to what you were saying about, you know, you deciding to move everything to Disney Plus and watch Hulu there, and you're enjoying it, and you're kind of like, I don't need to open Hulu anymore. I think this is inherently the most difficult part of any tech company. And this is where I'm going to turn to Jason in a second, because I feel like he'll have really good insight here, that Disney has figured out, that Netflix figured out, that Disney is starting to figure out, that the other ones have not or just don't care to, which is, it is really, really, really hard to get people to open your app. Like you can have an app. I always say the hardest part is getting them to download or pay for it. The second hardest part is getting them to use it more often, right? And this is kind of to Jason Kilar's point. This was like the metric of success really is how many people used it the day before and how long were they engaged with it. And this idea of like what we see with ESPN and Disney saying, which we know Amazon and Apple are probably trying to do as well. We kind of have an idea about this. You know, we're going to partner with the RSNs and direct people to the RSNs. It's not so that they can own your attention there, but they want you to open ESPN first. Instead of opening up Google to be like, where do I go to watch this? Why can't ESPN be the director and then place, you know, some programmatic advertising on top of that, some display ads, whatever it might be. If you're Disney, if you can turn Disney Plus into a command center, if you can find a way to control the flow of attention throughout a very non-interoperable app system that currently exists, but use your own interoperability to make it a much easier experience that also includes e-commerce and gaming and potentially attraction, right? Because we know that Disney wants to also include this to some extent within the parks. At that point, not only do you get to say, okay, well, we're going to own the passive TV experience because of what Jason's saying, exactly what he's saying about Shogun. I'm going to open Disney Plus. I'm going to get most of my TV from there, whether it's Hulu, whatever it is, ESPN when they bring it in, whatever it might mm-hmm. be. I just need to open Disney Plus, and I'm happy that that sounds great. And then you're going to own the event, because you're still going to go to, you might go to a theater to watch a movie, or you're going to go to Disney World to go, you know, ride Guardians of the Galaxy, which I rode for the first time. It's a great coaster. And so you're going to go do that. And then their argument is, if we can also control where you're doing your sports betting, and we're going to help you go into Fortnite or whatever it is, and we're going to always bring you into this app. And so our app becomes a way for you to navigate the third web of entertainment, and we get to be at the center of it. And therefore we are a necessity. You are less likely to cancel us, even if your engagement is not directly within our app long-term, even if it's just because we make an easier experience. Then I'll pass over to Jason in a second, but I feel like, and this one, I want to get your opinion on, Jason, very difficult to do. Apple has spent a decade plus trying to figure this out. And I would say he's arguably done it the best out of absolutely anyone. In terms of like, I mean, this is literally what the DOJ is suing them. Like, they do a very good job of it. Google has spent time trying to figure this out on the social, on the software side. They've done pretty good. Amazon has tried to figure this out on the e-commerce side. They've done pretty good. Jason, do you think Disney can do it on the entertainment side, or do you think they don't have the scale and that Netflix really needs to be a partner here for them to get to that level?
Oh, I mean, I think Disney's ambitions are too great to use Netflix as a partner. I think somebody has to stand up to Netflix, right? I think that if it's not Disney, I'm not quite sure who it's going to be. So I think they're going to have that ambition to have their crown jewels and keep it amongst themselves. And I think they've got some, you know, the culture, or at least parts of them have the culture to respond and do what needs to be done. We'll see. I mean, but that's that. And they have the advantage over Netflix in things like sports.
Yes.
So they've got franchises that Netflix doesn't have. Like, they've got a lot of advantages. And I think, do I think that they can be in the near future, like, beat Netflix? No, I don't. But I think that maybe they're so strong that they shouldn't give any fuel to Netflix.
I also think, you know, you said something that really got me thinking, which is, you said they have sports, and that's something Netflix kind of doesn't, which is true. And when you were talking about that, I was thinking about Netflix's own game ambitions, right? And I think I'm less of a bear on it than other people are. And so the one thing Netflix doesn't have, which is what they've had to do, is go out and buy a bunch of games, right? They licensed, like, Grand Theft Auto, because they don't have a lot of IP to turn into stuff. Disney has gone the alternate route, right? Disney licenses all of its IP out. It says, like, we're not going to make games. We don't really know to do that. We don't want to do that. We're going to go make money just giving you the license to Star Wars or Marvel, and you go and make us games, EA or Fortnite or whoever it is. And there's a part of me that's like, and I realize this is much more complicated. I realize that I am not an engineer, and so I say things, and people like Aaron LaBerge, who's the CTO of Disney, is like, that takes months or years, and we can't do that right now. But to bring in a version of Comixology to Disney Plus, to like, or the Marvel app, right? Comics app, to like read comics within your Disney Plus app, to find ways to bring some form of mobile Marvel games or mobile Star Wars games into the Disney Plus app, so you launch it from the app. The reason why this gets complicated for Netflix, from what I can understand, and this is based on my own analysis, is that Netflix does not want to pay Apple anything. So microtransactions become very difficult because, and Jason here is more of an expert, so he can tell me if I'm wrong. But from what I understand, it's kind of like, that's a hard relationship, Netflix and Apple. Disney and Apple, great relationship.
Sure.
Like, a fantastic relationship. And I think Disney would be much happier than Netflix with saying, like, sure, whatever, you take like 20-30%, do you? Like, I mean, we don't love it, but like, whatever. We understand we have to kind of be in your system. You are still the global kind of distributor in terms of how people get their apps. And I think Disney doing that to then become a point where you still have to go to Apple to get the Disney Plus app, and these games are not going to be exclusively within Disney Plus, but maybe for an audience, or comics. The more you can bring into this app, you know, I kind of like refer to this as like the big like CNN pivot. Like CNN's future is not going to be as a TV channel, right? Like, and the app is not just going to be a version of the TV channel in the app. Like, it's got to be something that is completely different for how audiences associate with their phones and their technology and their apps. And that's a scary moment for CNN. I think for Disney, there's a level of, you have to build this kind of interoperable universe that creates a sense of, I'm going to habitually go and spend time here and open it day after day after day, which you can sell then to advertisers, and you can increase pricing power. And that does not mean Disney owns everything. I don't think Disney's going to has any intention on building a VR device, right? I think they have every intention, as we can see, of working with Apple on Vision Pro or like working with Meta, but they have no interest in developing that technology. It doesn't make any sense. But where you can control the software component or redirect from your app to a software component, I think for Disney, that is the difference between, okay, I'm going to spend some time with this app for TV and that's fine. and I'm going to control five, you know, let's say 4% of time versus I'm going to control how you maybe get to your betting, how you get to your games, how you get to your comics. And now I'm controlling 11%, 12% of attention. And that difference in terms of ad revenue and in terms of pricing power is massive. Now, is it easy? No. Is it doable? I don't know. Like I'm saying these things and I feel like Wizard of Ozzy. I'm like, oh, just go. Like, but I don't know. And that's why, you know, Aaron LaBerge, if you ever listen to this, love to know if it's possible. I'm sure you've thought about it. But it's increasingly clear to me that that is what these direct to consumer distributors are going to have to be. Like they're going to inherently have to be direct to consumer in so many capacities,
right,
and not just be a sliver of direct to consumer within the Apple or Amazon or Google or Comcast or Charter landscape where right. they're or and I had a friend point this out to me. Or Netflix landscape, where Netflix scales and then goes, you want to reach an audience of this size, you got to partner with either Apple or us. Right? And I think to your point, Jason, Disney doesn't want to do that with Netflix necessarily. Although Bob Iger right. today said there is a possibility in which a Netflix Disney Plus bundle of sorts could be
sure.
offered. I think Disney.
We got a letter about this, but I wanted to go back to something that you said about Disney and direct to consumer, which is, you know, it's so easy, especially in the context of our conversations here, where we're focused on streaming, to think about Disney as a movie studio. And obviously the legacy of Disney going back 100 years is the movie studio. But Disney's park business and its cruise business make it a direct to consumer company. Like it is entirely within Disney's corporate culture and its self-image to be good at a 21st century direct-to-consumer business because it's in their DNA. It really is, or at least it was put in there by Walt in the 60s. It's in their DNA. They are not just a movie studio. They are not just their competitors are like a movie studio and a cable company that owns a movie studio, right? But that's not what Disney is. So I think that right. I feel like I want to give them a pep talk a little bit. It's like, you can do this. You can do this and have advantages that Netflix does not have. And if you want to work with them, that's fine. But like you can build this, even if you have to make some interesting things, do things you haven't done before. You can do this. It's not that having parks and cruise ships and hotels is actually relevant. It's different, but it's relevant to what you're going to need to do in order to increase your engagement across, you know, your entire customer base in all facets. And, you know, Disney's good at finding those people wherever they are. So just keep doing that, but in new ways.
I just want to like set your really in like, I like your pep talk. I want you to give a Disney pep talk and we'll just set it to like very specific Mighty Ducks music.
Sure.
Right? Like we'll just have the score from like a very inspirational Disney sports movie play in the background.
We're Yeah, sure. Let's do it. We'll get Steven to look something up for my next pep talk that I do. We can do that. Okay, before we get back into it, let me take a break. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu with 35 options, including popular ones like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. That's just for our editor, Steven Schapansky. He could get that one. Try it, Steven. Or don't. It's fine. But let me tell you, I tried it, and it's really great. And they have more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor has sent me a couple of boxes, and I've said this before, my wife steals them and takes them to work with her because she likes them so much, and there is no better endorsement than that. The quality of the ingredients is excellent. You microwave them in a couple of minutes, and they taste great. They don't taste that kind of reheated thing you get with microwave stuff sometimes. Not like that. And I think it goes down to the quality of the ingredients Factor uses. And like I said, I could tell you more, but I can't because my wife stole them and took them to work to eat them there for her lunch. That is the endorsement here. There's so much to love about Factor. Chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes. That's right. Go gourmet and try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini. No fuss meals, no mess meals. Eliminate that hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up, and it's tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals and pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/downstream50 and use the code downstream50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. What a deal! Code downstream50 at factormeals.com/downstream50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Thank you to Factor for sending me very tasty meals, supporting Downstream and all of Relay FM. Now, before we go, we asked last time for people to send in streaming advice to us, and boy, did they. There is so much. And in fact, we've run out of time to share all of them, but please keep sending them in, downstreamfeedback.com. But I wanted to do one service that got the most advice for us of everything. I guess we're going to need to check this out. Ryan, ZMK, and another different Ryan. Wow, this service is very popular with Ryan. All various Ryans wrote in to say Dropout TV, which used to be...
I love Dropout TV.
I have never seen it. I've read about it. I know about it. I knew it used to be College Humor, and they turned and they did the streaming service, and it's Dropout, and people love it. I haven't seen it. Ryan K. said, watch Game Changer. It's a lot. Yep. It'll scratch the same itch as Taskmaster, one of my favorite shows. Bunch of entertaining people forced to play weird games without knowing what they're getting into beforehand.
Yep.
ZMK also said Game Changer, chaotic game show, make some noise, showcases fantastic improv bits like Whose Line Is It Anyway? And they have a D&D show, Dimension 20. So that's awesome. And then Ryan M., said Game Changer, make some noise, Dimension 20, but really there's so much good content on there for a steal. I love Dropout. Okay, I guess I got to try Dropout.
Dropout is so good, Jason. If you get into a specific community of comedians, like, they're just so good at it almost feels very, like, Critical Role-y. Like, if you really get into that group, you love anything they do. And Dropout feels this way. Also, shout out to my former colleague, who is much more successful than I will ever be in my life, Brian David Gilbert, BDG, who is on a Dropout TV show. I think Adam Conover, who's great, was a leading voice during the WGA strikes, and is a great comedian. He's on Dropout. Through my luck in life, I've gotten to meet and kind of know a little bit Ricky Van Veen, who created College Humor, and I know, like, he's just so immensely I think happy with kind of what Dropout is, and so it's very cool. If you love, I would say, and if everyone listening here, it does not surprise me that Relay FM audience has a Dropout crossover audience, because I feel like it's hyper online, but in the nicest way. It is like, there's hyper online in the worst way, which is basically all of Twitter.
Twitter, yeah.
And then there is, like, hyper online in the best way. And I feel like that is, it used to be kind of like Tumblr-y, YouTube-y, went back when those were fun. And now it really is Dropout. And it's just, yeah. Great recommendation all around. Excellent, excellent call. Fantastic service.
All right. We will, I'll check it out. We'll have more streaming advice next time. If you've got streaming advice for us, shows or services to check out, downstreamfeedback.com. Also, if you have any questions for us or letters or comments, downstreamfeedback.com. We love to hear from you. Send it in. Love to your mothers. And if you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber yet, this brings us to the end of the show. But in the Downstream Plus version, we also did a very special episode of Sports Corner. And we had a lot of thought about Apple TV Plus and Disney Plus getting together in some way. That was all really interesting. Every other
Jason,
episode.
Jason, with those pluses... Would they cancel each other out?
It'd be like a square or a square? Multiplication symbol or something. I don't know. Every other episode, most of the show is available just for our supporters. So if you would like to become a supporter, go to downstream.plus and you'll get the full versions of every episode, access to the Relay FM Discord with lots of very nice online people, bonus shows from Relay FM, and more. You can find Director of Strategy Julia at ParrotAnalytics.com and Puck.News, which added John Orend as a sports columnist now. I paid for Puck News for you. And it keeps paying me back because I get your column, but I also get all this other, and there's more of it all the time. Highly recommend it. People should check out Puck. You can find me at sixcolors.com and here at Relay FM. I'm on lots of shows here, theincomparable.com for lots more shows, talking about pop culture stuff. And that is the end for now, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Until next time, Julia, say goodbye.
Bye, friends.
Bye, everybody.